Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back for a brand new edition of Collider Ladies Night Pre-Party. Alyssa Sutherland. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a better lead Deadite performance than what you do in this movie.
Thank you.
Certain
Thank
things you. Are seared in my brain for life now, as they should be.
Oh, good. That was the aim. It was so much fun to do. And, like, credit to Lee for writing some real cracker one-liners for me to deliver.
Oh, I'm coming to those one-liners eventually. We always start with this question on every Ladies Night episode. What was the movie, the performance, personal experience you had, you name it, that first made you say to yourself, I have to be an actor and nothing else?
Oh, that's a really good question. I feel like I was too young to remember what it was. I just remember from a very young age telling my mother that I wanted to be on the TV, which was probably me needing a little attention. thankfully, it's morphed into something else now. But I just, yeah, when I was really little, I would be like, Mom, I think I need to be on the TV. I want to be on the TV. And she'd be like, next week. We'll look into that next week. Yes.
So correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but the modeling side of things took off first. So while you were doing that and while you were having great success in that entertainment industry, what was the thing or the experience you had that made you say, like, it's time to shift and leave that successful thing behind and take a risk pursuing this other path?
Yeah, it's funny. I had wanted to be an actress. And when I was in high school, I was doing drama. And it just didn't feel realistic to me. I grew up in Brisbane in Australia. No one I knew was an actor. I didn't think it was like, it was such a pipe dream to me that while I was in high school, I'm quite a practical human. And I was like, you know, I really like science. And I think maybe I'm going to go to university and study science. And I looked at the subjects I had and the course that I wanted to get into. And I needed to take chemistry. I didn't like chemistry, organic chemistry can piss off. but I needed to do it to get into uni in Australia. And the one thing that fit into the schedule was that I had to drop drama and pick up chemistry. And it was sad, but, you know, okay, well, that's what I do. And then I was discovered as a model and I kind of thought, well, maybe I could figure my way back into acting at some point. And this has come to me. I was discovered in a shopping mall while I was there with my best friend. And my mum encouraged me to take the opportunity and travel and defer from university. I got into the course, so you'll be pleased to know. but I deferred from uni and she said, take the opportunity and travel the world. Why not? So I did. And then a few years later, I had the opportunity to read for an Australian film that actually never came to fruition. But my experience of reading for the film, I had a screen test with the director, a lovely Australian director, Jocelyn Morehouse. I love her work. So I went through this process with her, and then in the end, the film never made it. And I got a role in the film, but it didn't get made. But that experience really sparked it in me. And so I just started taking classes when I could and just slowly plodding my way along. I don't know how long I spent in classes in New York. And eventually it got to the point where if I was going to keep modeling, it was going to keep me from auditioning. Back in those days, you know, you'd get an audition, it would take, you'd have a day to prepare, and inevitably it would be like, oh, but I'm getting on a flight tonight to go somewhere else. And so I had to take the leap, and I decided to move to LA, not take on a modeling agent in LA, and dedicate myself in LA. Yeah.
So taking a leap like that, again, it's a risk. And this is also like any entertainment industry, I feel like, has a habit of boxing people into the first thing that they're really good at. Did you ever encounter that when you wanted to start booking more acting roles, where folks were like, I don't know if she can go from being a successful model to a serious actor?
Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely. I think, well, I don't think people question whether models can become actresses. I think there have been enough that have proved themselves. So I don't think the industry as a whole, like, pigeonholes models. What I do think you fight, especially as a woman, is, but she's too beautiful to be a lawyer. She's too beautiful to be this. And yet we have Brad Pitt, who is an extremely good-looking fella, and he can play lots of different things. So I've found that has been a difficult thing to overcome, which is why Evil Dead Rise is like such a gift.
I was going to say, now here you are as a deadite.
I know.
I love that though.
I always do a little internet stalking for these interviews. Uh-oh. And I saw a photo of you with your acting coach, and I love talking about the actor-coach relationship. What is it about Craig's way of coaching and teaching that you think aligns especially well with the way that you like to receive notes and, you know, adapt your process based on the advice you're given?
He approaches the work in a few different ways. I think it's both. We like to plot an arc. There's a technicality to the work that we do, always kind of like we mix an outside in and an inside out process. So I like to think about a role. Where does it start? Where is it going to end up? How do I get there? How do we go up and down to keep things interesting? So I'll look at it sort of firstly from that point of view, and then start working inside out on creating events and memories in a person's life that brings them to where they are now, and infuse them with like their behaviors. Why do they react this way to this stimulus, and build an earlier memory for them? Sort of do that. And then of course, once you get to set, you've got to drop that all behind and react to the person in front of you.
Does that process completely change with an Evil Dead movie, or because mm-hmm. we do meet her like in the flesh as she is, it still applies for that?
It's all different. Honestly, like that's kind of an overview, but then like I'm gonna go and contradict myself. There are some characters where like I haven't found, I know when I get the piece that is the in to a character. When it was Alsog on Vikings, I remember there was a moment where I felt deep empathy for her because of something that I decided she'd gone through, and I was like, oh, that's it. That's what that is. I did an Australian miniseries a couple of years ago, and it was the accent. All of a sudden, this accent sort of changed the way I sat and the way I moved, and that was sort of the seed for the character. And then with Evil Dead Rise, it was like a flow state movement that I spent many hours in my quarantine hotel room in New Zealand crafting to some weird demented playlist of creepy stuff.
What was on that playlist?
There's one song, and I actually keep forgetting the name of it because I don't have my phone on me. It's by a band called Pucifer, and it's called like Rev 2220 or I forget it, but there's a version of that song that hits me in this dark, twisted, angsty place. And I watched some dance videos on YouTube as well, and I found one that I really liked by this choreographer, and I sent it over to Lee, and he really liked the vibe of it as well, and that was sort of a starting inspiration point for some movement and like little weird twitches and stuff.
Just know that immediately after I leave here, I'm gonna go Google that song and I'm going to listen to it.
Okay.
Yep. Many follow-up questions, because you just name-dropped a couple of your earlier titles.
I did.
Do you
like the way I worked my resume into the conversation?
It was very
skilled at that.
Well, that's what I like to do on Ladies' Night. Shout out as many titles as possible. So of all of your earliest professional set experiences, which one would you credit with helping you put into focus, you know, the types of stories that you wanted to tell and maybe the types of on-set environment you wanted to work in the most?
I mean, I credit Vikings with a lot because it was really my first, like big acting role. I'd done a few guest stars in a couple of like smaller independent film. I hadn't been on a set that was really like that big, like we've got a budget behind us, this is what's happening. I learned so much. My God, I think back to my first day on set of Vikings, and I felt firstly like a complete imposter. But I was incredibly nervous and didn't, you know, you're working with cameras. There's a whole separate skill set that you don't really learn in acting class when it comes to cameras. And you learn things like, oh, in the blocking of this scene, I should turn to my left, not to my right. That's better for the camera. And you get there, you build it. But that really took a while. And I think working on that set and contributing to the character, I found a lot of in-between moments with Auslog that, and that really made me so hungry, and I felt myself like really defending my character on Vikings as well, and I loved it. I love acting. It's like, give me more. Give me more.
Okay. I want to follow up on Viking stuff in a second, but because you just said that, this is a question I like to ask every once in a while. What is your absolute favorite part of the acting process? Like putting your costume on for the first time, rehearsing, but then on the other hand, what is not necessarily your least favorite, but a part of the process where you see room to grow for yourself and you're eager to tackle that?
My absolute favorite is being in the middle of a scene and being so in the moment. That's what your focus is. It's like extreme mindfulness mixed with like flow state, and like it's like a drug for me. When you feel like you have been completely truthful and your partner in the scene has been completely truthful with you, and there's just this chemistry in the air that you can't describe. Oh my God, it's the best. Like if I could do that every day, I would. Yes.
It's a good feeling to chase. Half, though.
It's so good. What was the other half? Can you remember?
Not necessarily your least favorite, but an area of the acting process where you see room to grow for yourself.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Comedy. Oh, I had a casting director many, 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 many years ago call an agent after I'd been in to read for her. She laughed through my audition. It was a comedy that I was auditioning for, but straight away she called my agent at the time and said, never send her to me again, she's not funny. And it's just this monkey on my back.
For what it's worth, I mean, I said this to you before we started rolling.
Thank you.
I mean, it's a very specific form of comedy.
It is.
Nail the Evil
Thank
Dead
you.
Comedy.
Thank
and that's
you.
Not, that's a very specific form of comedy.
It's honestly the first time that I felt successful at comedic moments, and I think there are holes there for me to work on, and I would like to, but oh my God, it also scares the shit out of me.
I feel like things are boring if they don't scare the shit out of you.
That's true.
And then we never grow.
It's very true.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah. Back to Vikings really quick, because I did want to ask you about her death scene, because I think that's such a great example of, you know, a moment in a show that basically like lives or dies based on performance subtext. So can you kind of tell me a little bit about figuring the right tone for that conversation, but also the perfect way for her to react when that arrow goes through her, because that completely defines what her final moments of life mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, credit to Michael Hirst for the way he wrote that scene. It really mirrored some personal feelings I had. Just, you know, you're coming in, you're a second wife, you're sort of trying to force your way into a fandom and you're a controversial character. And, you know, there was a lot of stuff that I had to stay away from. When I first joined the show, I was so excited to have this role. And I went onto social media before my first episode aired. Won't be doing that again. And saw comments from people, so many physical comparisons between myself and Catherine Winnick that were pretty dreadful to read, honestly. And so I stayed away from it, but I kind of always felt like the fandom weren't with me, generally speaking. Like there's a little pocket that really appreciate Auslog. To have this death scene and basically have Auslog kind of be like, I was a part of this history too, like that's sort of the subtext. And it was perfect for my personal feelings about it, because I always wanted the fandom to embrace this woman who was so complex from where I stood, and I wanted them to see that, and I wanted them to have empathy for her. So it sort of mirrored that. And I loved... I decided with that scene that she was negotiating her death. And if she could provoke Lagertha and be killed, then technically she died in battle and would go to Valhalla.
So incredibly well done. I've watched that scene more times than I can count.
Thank you.
Getting into Evil Dead now. I'll start here. Having gone through this experience, can you give me one do and one do not for playing a deadite in an Evil Dead movie?
Gosh.
Or more than one, because I'm sure there are many.
Okay, one do is to do it with Lee Cronin. Do it with Lee Cronin. The stuff that he wrote for Ellie was so wonderful and, like, scary stuff to work with. You know, the first time I read Mummies with the Maggots Now, I was like, oh, dear. That's going to be requiring some real thought, because what a trap. And I do not want to fall into the trap. It's like you have to go away from the obvious with lines like that. So work with Lee Cronin, and his taste mirrors my taste when it comes to performances. We were always on the same page. So I would say that's the do. The don't as a deadite, don't take it too seriously. Don't. It's an Evil Dead film. It is meant to be fun. It's meant to be entertaining. And, like, what a privilege to be part of a franchise like that. It's a pretty neat place to be.
Spot on, do not write there. I feel like that is the main thing that applies to all actors who play deadites.
Yeah.
You brought up Lee, so I'll go there next. Yeah. I'm a very big fan of his.
Yeah.
I think he's going to direct so many more big movies after this, too. Given your experience working with him as a leader on set and as an actor's director, what are you most looking forward to even more actors getting to experience if they work with him on future films?
You know, the greatest thing with Lee is that I could completely trust him and trust his taste. I never felt like he was steering me wrong. And there are a couple of times where I was like, are you sure we've got it? Maybe we need to, like, keep going. And he was like, no, trust me, it's good. I'm like, okay, all right. Yeah, he's just wonderful, and he has a great ability with me. I always felt confident and so comfortable because that role is like, wow, you could really fail. And if you have a fear of failing, then you're going to be way too inhibited. And he removed my fear of failing. I was able to try whatever I wanted to try. There are some things that I wish were in the cut that we tried, but it would have changed the tone of the film. And my babies were killed in the edit. There were some things that I would see him over Zoom in ADR after we got done filming. Lee, is that thing in there? Is it in the cut? And he'd be like, I don't know what's going to make it.
What a beautiful quality in a director, though, just removing the fear of failure. I really think that's probably one of the best things someone like that could have.
Absolutely. And he said that from the get-go. He was like, I want you to feel empowered to do your thing and to try whatever you want. And I found that the set was very welcoming and generous. We had an incredible first AD, Dara. When he laughed at the end of a take, I was like, we did it. Dara laughed. That was a good one.
All right, getting into, I guess, the character's headspace. I don't know how much you did, like, backstory work and things like that, but is there anything you came up with for Ellie that maybe we don't hear about in the movie or even see on screen, but we can feel informing your performance in a way that when she does turn, we're always reminded of what she has lost and what her family is losing by her being a deadite?
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going a different direction with the question, and my head was going to respond
one way. I'll take both directions.
And then you. Wow. I'm going to go with where I was headed, and then we can circle back. Is that okay? I think what was underneath a lot of the work that I did that isn't really there, and it's not in the story either, but I had to tap into some real rage. And I think a lot of women have rage. I think it's quite natural for us. I think society ingrains some self-sacrificing. Women who are self-sacrificing and don't complain and they're there to serve others and to please others are put up on a pedestal. I lived a lot of my life doing that, and I don't think it served me, and I think I had some repressed rage from doing that and pleasing others and always thinking of the other person. Don't make the other person uncomfortable. You be uncomfortable. You can take on the discomfort so that man isn't uncomfortable. And I tapped into that, and I think there are probably a lot of women that could relate to having some of that. So I found it quite easy to tap into rage, and it was very therapeutic.
I mean, that does it could potentially lean into what I was getting at in terms of backstory.
Mm.
Basically, the relationship that she had with her sister and their history together and her history with her own children, just making sure that we feel that there is a full history there, even though we don't get to experience it in the first act of the movie. We get to experience some of it in the first act, but not her entire history. So are there any, like, family backstory elements that you came up with that we could feel informing your performance, even though we don't get to experience them? Got there eventually.
Okay. I think, I mean, relationship-wise with the kids, what happens is, like, it's like the deadite taps into Ellie's memories and Ellie's relationships and Ellie's knowledge of her children and then uses that against them. It's, like, a pretty psychopathic empathic thing to do, to use people's vulnerabilities against them. And I think, you know, I think that's a lot of what the Deadite does. In terms of relationship, I think with Beth specifically, Ellie, they're sisters, but Ellie was also her mother figure. There's a very quick reference to our mother in the beginning of the film, and Lily and Lee and I spoke about our sisterly relationship, and that our mother was really not present, be it physically or emotionally, and that Ellie had mothered Beth throughout their life.
I had a feeling you were going that. I mean, that's one of those things that it might not be said and harped on, but you could feel it in their dynamic together.
Yeah. So it's like sort of taking this sort of ultimate mother figure, but
my heart. What about when it comes to, like, I don't know if this is something you even considered, but the mentality of a Deadite, like the headspace a Deadite needs to be in.
Yeah.
Do you consider that, and like how that might feel emotionally for a Deadite, and how that influences how they behave physically?
I did think about it, and I said earlier today, it's like what I wanted to add to the Deadite was a sense of joy. Like, I had rage, but I also wanted the Deadite to have joy, because then that gave me so much to play with. And also there's something really sinister about someone getting off on disturbing you that way and getting under your skin. And then it kept the performance from being a one-note performance then. So I wanted to have joy and have this like sense of celebration happening, because I think that fits for Evil Dead. It's like a celebration of carnage, the whole film. So it's like I wanted the Deadite to have that. So I was like, well, it's been trapped with this book and tied to this book. It hasn't had a human to embody for how long? It's been tortured by being trapped in this thing. And all of a sudden I started feeling sorry for this, like, for this tortured soul.
I feel like the fact that it has teeth and a mouth makes that even more easy to wrap my brain around.
Right? That's just, it hasn't had anything, like it hasn't had its expression, which sort of mirrored like where I tapped into. And all of a sudden I was like, this poor thing, well, we've got to give it a body because it's been so long, so long. Yeah. So really the Deadite is the victim.
Hi. I'll end with one spoiler question here, just to open it up. So you could talk about anything. We will brand this with a flag and everyone will be warned. Of everything you had to film set piece wise for this, going into shooting, which thing did you think would be the most difficult for you to pull off? And then ultimately, was that indeed the most challenging, or did something else catch you by surprise?
Quite honestly, I didn't really think about what I had to do in terms of what was going to be the hardest. That's not really my mindset going into a project, although maybe that would have helped me. I love what I do so much, and I come from a world of fashion and modeling where I did not feel respected or valued as an actual human. And I feel that I am as an actress. It's a different experience for me, and I love what I do. So it's like, I don't really care if I have prosthetics on my face. I don't really care if I'm covered in blood. If I get to do what I do for a living and get paid for it, that's a really privileged place to be. I've struggled in my career. I know what it's like to not have a job. So this is just like, I get to be on set. I get to do what I love. That's really cool. So most days I'm going to work really happy. And if I feel like I earn my glass of wine at the end of the day because I put in a good performance, hell yeah. Having said that, I never want to do a vomit rig again in my life. It was disgusting. It was awful. They give you a long, narrow tube. Have you seen these?
I am aware of them, yes.
The force of that liquid being like throttled into your mouth and bouncing off a mouth. It's like your mouth is just like vibrating. Your head is vibrating for the force of it. And then you've like, you can't help but actually gag. And it's just, it's so disgusting. I can't remember how many takes we had to do, but that was, I'd say that's the only day where I was like, how many more do we have to do? How many more do we have to do? Can I go now?
Every once in a while I'll play a Would You Rather game. And one of the go-to questions is, would you rather have to fake sneeze or fake vomit in a scene? And I assume I know your answer now.
I haven't had to fake sneeze. So
I always think fake sneezing is a hard thing to pull off and make it feel believable. So
yeah.
But vomit, I mean, clearly
haven't
sucks.
Had to fake sneeze. Yeah, you're right. But at least you're not like having to deal with, fake sneeze.
Well, whatever you went through to film that and everything in this movie, it was well worth it. Huge, huge, huge congratulations on everything you accomplished on Evil Dead Rise and everything to come in the future.
Thank you so much. It was lovely talking to you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.